How can I enhance my ability to directly communicate with our dog and other animals, whether domesticated or wild?
Yeah, communicating with animals is a great thing to do, and it really is something that's possible. But you have to remember that animals don't communicate linguistically, meaning they're not going to use the same kinds of words that you use. They tend to communicate more in pictures and feelings. So whenever you want to communicate with your animal, it's really important to first start with, how are you feeling? Because the first thing they're going to pick up on is your feelings, right? So how am I feeling? So you don't want to try to communicate with your dog if you're still thinking about work, or if you're upset with your partner, or anything else is going on. You want to communicate with your dog from a place of being very centered. And one of the things that's very interesting is, as you move forward on your consciousness studies, communicating with animals becomes more and more likely, because you're less likely to come from an uncentered place when you do so. See, the centered bit helps with the communication. You being more conscious helps you with the centered bit. See how those go together nicely? So the first thing to do is to really see where you are emotionally. Now, sometimes, we know with Veronica, sometimes the cats do something odd, like go to the bathroom in a place she doesn't prefer, and she wants to communicate with them not to do that. Well, she's angry or upset or frustrated because there's pee someplace she didn't want it to be. So you got to get to a place first where you're not in a reactive mode. It's not really helpful to communicate with your animals from a reactive place. So wait. Wait, and then when you're not in a reactive place and you can be in a centered place, then what's good is communicating with pictures, in the sense that imagining what it is that you don't like cleaning up something, a mess that you don't appreciate, and feeling the feeling of disappointment or discouraged or frustrated as you're cleaning it up, so that you combine the feelings with the pictures, but not a reactive feeling. There's a difference there that we hope you can see. Yeah, that's the thing. That seems to work best.
Some pets have aggression issues. When training doesn't seem to help, what's the spiritual approach?
Yeah, well, the first answer to the first question is going to help you with this one too. Be careful you're not in a reactive place when you want to do your training. It can't be stop doing that, tugging on the leash kind of behavior. You have to be the grown-up and the adult and the human in the equation, and come from a place where you can communicate your displeasure without indicating a strong emotional response, because that's not as easily read, understood by animals, right? So when there's aggression issues, also a lot of times the aggression that the animal is exhibiting is because the human in their life is exhibiting aggression on some level, or repressed aggression or frustration or anger. Remember, animals are going to see pictures. They're going to understand your pictures and your emotions, your pictures and your emotions. So what pictures and emotions are you sharing in your life in general that your animal can be picking up on? Because they absolutely definitely pick up on your emotional state. It's a really good exercise to help you become more conscious of what's going on internally, to be around your animals and to see how that affects their behavior patterns. Because it'll bring more consciousness into your life when you see that it's reflected in your animal behavior, your animal partners.
My dog and cat are love incarnate. It's just part of some greater plan?
Of course it's part of a greater plan. You need an example of love on your planet that isn't disturbed by interpersonal relationships. However, it is disturbed by how you are acting on the inside of you. It's affected by how you're acting on the inside of you. Nicely, animals tend to be extremely forgiving, way more than people. So they give you a lot of leeway in what they'll accept as a loving act on your part. Until they don't. And then you have the behavior issues that were mentioned earlier. But yeah, animals, especially the domesticated animals, have the opportunity to offer a great deal of love. It's the closest thing to unconditional love you really get. Humans are very conditionally loving. This is a normal thing. You tend to love to help you fix your fears. But animals tend to love because they can't help themselves. And even when an animal is abused or treated poorly or underfed or gets its ears pulled on by the two-year-old, you know, they just go, I'm still here. I'm still here. Very steady. very steady, loving source. In the most part, animals can be a very steady, loving source. And what a nice reminder to have that on your planet when a lot of times your relationships between people can be so challenging, to have that steady reminder that love exists.
As a collective, what is the animal kingdom's message for humanity at this time?
Well, the steady love is a big one. The other is balance. You know, animals tend to balance themselves out when they're not interfered with by external sources, like habitat being overrun. They tend to come to a balance, the right amount of zebras and the right amount of tigers, right? Right amount of elephants, right amount of giraffes, that the nature, the system that's sitting there can absorb or handle. And that's a very important aspect of what the animal kingdom shares, is a sense of balance. Now, let's say you have a big fire, right? And it takes out a whole area of habitat. Of course, the animals have to readjust their numbers. But even in the sense that the lions hunt and they take out the weak and sometimes the young animals, right? Leaving a very strong populace to prosper. And that is sometimes interpreted as violence and as wrong, yet it allows for you to have life on this planet. If one animal wasn't eating the other animal, if some animals weren't eating dead animals and some animals weren't eating live animals and some animals weren't eating plants and trees, very soon you'd come to an out of balance place. Yet when you take it as a whole, it's an amazing organism that moves and changes its balances. And you see that sometimes a certain fish or sea creature of some kind is extinct in an area because of maybe an oil spill. And then after a certain number of years, here it comes back. And they're amazed. Wow, the whatevers are found again in the blankety-blank bay. That resurgence and that finding the balance is an amazing, amazing gift that the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom combine to offer.
Do souls incarnate as animals?
Oh, now this is an interesting question. Of course we have to say yes. Because anytime you say do souls, the answer is yes. We can't think of a time when it's going to be no. Remember, infinite and immortal, that means there's a lot of you and you've been around for a really long time. Meaning souls are infinite and immortal. So by the time you have infinity times a whole bunch, almost everything has been tried. So an interesting way to phrase this question would be, is it common for souls to incarnate as animals? Now we have to remember that it takes such a small percentage of your soul to experience human, right? If we imagine your soul is 100%, it only takes 12%, not even that, we're just picking a number. It's a very small amount, 12%, let's say, to run a human form. So you already have 88% of your soul doing other stuff while you're here being you. So it's a very short jump to imagine that it would spin off 10% or 0.1% of a percent, right? Do we say that right? A tenth of a percent. Now we've got it. A tenth of a percent or so to be a dog or a cat or something like that. So of course, if your soul can, it will, right? So that's always the answer. And of course, you're experiencing that. Are you experiencing it right now as in 2014 now? Maybe, maybe not. But have you? Almost guaranteed. In your soul collective, your collective of all the experiences you as a soul have had, definitely, we would say almost everybody has been an animal of some kind. And yes, wild animals and domesticated animals. Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you experience them? You have to be really careful not to assume you experience them as you would experience being human. That's the other thing, is right now when you look out of your eyes, you have a certain way of thinking about the world. It's very language-based, like we were talking about earlier. If you incarnate as a cat, it is not a language-based experience. So you can't assume, we think it's called anthropomorphizing. Yeah, we said it wrong, but that's the word. Don't assume that your way of seeing the world is how you would see the world if you were in an animal body. Be careful about that, because it can get a little weird if you don't. Sure, you do have an experience of being a cat. Of course you do. And as a cat, what was it like? Nothing like being a human. Nothing like being a human. Isn't that great? That's why when you're here being a human, you should be a human. As a soul that's got a human incarnation stream going on, is that soul also expressing as an animal? Yes. At times, you're choosing to do that. That makes complete sense. You're also choosing to do a whole bunch of other things that, you know, we're not listing right now. Is it also true that animals, like, say, cats, have some kind of a collective soul or oversoul or some kind of a representation of them that's away from the individual souls that are expressing? Yes and no. If we say yes, then there's going to be this kind of idea that there's some cats that are only cat souls and some cats that are cats that have access to human lifetimes, hybrid souls. And that's not accurate. So we can't say yes. But it is true that when you're expressing as a cat, you have access to the collective consciousness of cats. So it's less that there's a soul that's affecting all cats because the souls are individuals, as much as there's a collective consciousness, just like there's a collective consciousness of women and of men. So when you're in a female body, you can tap into the collective consciousness and the lineage of women. And when you're in a male body, the same thing with men, right? Similarly, when you're expressing as an animal, there's the collective consciousness of all the times that animal has been expressed. But as far as is there a cat soul, we think it's more accurate to express it as there are souls expressing as cats and lots of other things all at the same time. So the animals that you encounter on Earth are expressions of the souls of those involved in the Earth experiment. Those expressing both as humans, those expressing as animals, those even expressing as what you would call nature. Remember, every soul is doing many things all at once. Many things. And this is one of them. The preconceived notion that seems to be present is that an animal is here experiencing Earth in the same way a human is. And it's just not true. A human comes to Earth to grow, to change, to become more conscious, to explore, and to delve into what it's like to progress over time, right? Whether it's your career, your education, your family, whatever it is, you progress over time as a human. We like to say it's you grow in consciousness as a human, right? And you do this over many lifetimes. You come to Earth and you have a series of lifetimes where not only in each lifetime do you have progression, but over the series of lifetimes you have progression. Animals don't care about that. That's why they're so much fun for you all to be around, is because they give you a break from that. They're very in the moment. There's no urge for personal growth. There's an urge for exploration of now and now and now and now. They're not looking for the same things humans are looking for. You know, we talk to you a lot about being fascinated. And all you got to do is see a cat and know that fascination is what they're all about. That in sleeping, they just explore the now. Whatever the now calls them to do is what they do. And matching energy with them in that way is really beautiful. But when you wonder what it's like to be an animal, you have to be very careful that you don't look at it as if it's busy being you just in a furry body. It has a completely different set of goals. If you want to say that, it has a completely different exploration of the planet and a completely different experience of it. They come here to be and to seize every moment for what it offers and to respond to every moment in whatever feels right. A sunbeam comes in the window, boy, that's time for a nap. There's no question. The owner comes home from work, it's time to jump around. It's 4:45 in the afternoon, better get up in that can of cat food. I know it's time. Now's the moment for it, right? So be really honoring of the process the animal has, which is to deeply experience the moment and not project onto it your desires. Sometimes people experience such companionship with their animals that they kind of let them fill the role of a partner in their life, right? It's like, I don't have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a husband, a wife, so I have this great animal in my life and it's my partner. And so it can be even easier to think of them in terms of human ambitions or ideas. That's not the way you want to think about them. They're great companions to show you unconditional loving, as close to unconditional loving as you get, to show you in the moment, and to show you deep, deep fascination for whatever they encounter, right? A dog comes upon anything and it's worth a sniff. Anything. Like, I think I need to sniff this. I think I need to sniff that. Nope, didn't sniff that long enough. Gotta sniff that one some more. Right? That is the deep fascination, the deep fascination that they offer.
Please share your wisdom on any differences between animal survival instincts versus human survival instincts.
Yeah, what an interesting question. We've never even considered that in the group before, so this is a wonderful opportunity to look at it. They're not that far apart, actually, because they're both based in stay alive. And they're both based in, if things change, we have to be more on alert. And if something startles us, we're tempted to run. So they're not that far apart, but animals aren't controlled by their survival instinct in the way that humans are. Humans are controlled by their survival instinct because it puts a sense of fear into them, and then they live with that fear and they project that fear into the future. Since animals live more in the moment, they are either afraid or not, right? And if the fear gets kicked up, they behave in ways that are a lot like humans. But once the fear is abated, they're back to it again. You can see this very easily with, all you have to do is make a loud noise near a cat. It jumps, looks around, and goes back to sleep. Because it's like, oh, clearly no threat. It doesn't project that that loud sound means that maybe later on that loud sound is going to come back. So we should put in a security alarm, right? That's a human thing. Animal thing is like, oh, right? In the moment. In the moment. They're much more in the moment. When triggered, you're going to respond with fight or flight, just like animals. But when after the trigger is a pass, the humans keep it around, whereas the animals tend to drop it. Unless the human really gets worked up and the animal picks up on your energy, and then both of you can be a little spun out. But in general, you know, it's trigger down for animals, up down. And humans, it's trigger and then it comes down a little bit, stays on your mind. That's the survival instinct pattern we observe most often. Not always, but most often.
Do souls incarnating into the animal kingdom choose the experiences for their incarnations, including their departure?
Sometimes. Sometimes you may decide, I want to have a lifetime as a beef cow. Sometimes you may want to have a lifetime as a pampered pet. You set a trajectory, for sure. Do you plan every single second of it? No, just like you don't plan every single second of your human incarnation. But you do start a trajectory, sure. Sure. And how you depart can be a reasonable extrapolation from the trajectory you're on, but not always. It's not always that you say, I'm going to have this experience and this is the way I'm going to leave the body. But sometimes you do. It all comes back to the fact that souls have had so many experiences. And you see how short some animal lifetimes are. You can imagine how many opportunities you have to be extremely creative with how you want to experience it. So again, souls do lots of things simultaneously, and they're insanely curious. So pretty much if the question is, do they? The answer is yes, they do, very often, and in all the ways you can't even imagine.
As with humans, do we encounter the same group of animals through our lifetimes, theirs and ours?
Yeah, well, because you tend to hang with soul groups, we've talked about this, you tend to hang with a soul group of like 3,000 to 5,000 souls. Not always, but often. And that's why sometimes you meet people and you think, I know you. I really know you. I really, really know you. And sometimes when you meet an animal, you're like, I really know you. And often that tries to be explained away as, oh, you must be my dog from childhood, or you must be my cat from when I was a teenager, or something like that. And it can be that. But it also can just be the soul group thing where you feel an affinity to a certain animal because you know that soul. The soul flavor or soul taste, let's call it, of an animal, a specific individual, isn't as strong as the amount that you would see or taste or feel from a human of that same soul. So you've got a soul that's in your soul group that you're familiar with, and it's currently, let's just say, being a dog and being a person. You meet the dog and it might feel very comfortable to you. You meet the person and you might say, I know you. It's not usually as strong, but it can be. Again, we don't mean to just always say it can be to every question. However, it can be is the answer to every question when you're asking about potentials of soul expression. You can do a lot of things as a soul, and you will do them. So, yes, you can definitely encounter animals. Now, you can encounter a cat that you had as a child, as an adult, that the same soul wants to express again. That's possible, too. And has happened many, 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 many times. So if you feel that's true for you, great. And if it isn't true for you, that's okay too. One of the things you don't want to get caught up in is, oh, I bet my dog from my childhood is back in the body again. I'm going to go looking at every animal shelter till I find him. Might not be exactly the best use of your time. You know, this is one of the reasons you have amnesia about reincarnation, is because if you could remember your previous lifetimes, as soon as you come into this body, you'd be going and looking for your wife from the last one, or the guy who killed you from the three times before, right? And that doesn't help you progress. We want progression. So amnesia helps you progress by keeping you in this moment as much as possible to start off with. And so going and seeking out animals that are the reincarnation or the same soul as the ones you've worked with before. However, if you come across one and you say, I know you, that's a nice thing too.
Please talk about animals' abilities to sense and move away from natural disasters like tsunamis.
Yeah, well, animals have a different amount of, a different range of hearing, sometimes a different range of sight. They have a collective communication system that they don't always use, but they often use. Especially in situations like that, whereas you might phone someone and say, oh my God, the ocean's doing something weird, get away from the ocean. The animals don't have phones, at least not yet. And because they don't, they have the other ways of energetically communicating with each other. You know, you put out that 911 red alert panic signal that animals have, it doesn't get activated that often, but they know it. They know it. We would say it's energetic. It moves through the air just like the signals of your cell phone do, but they don't need an external device. And they don't use it for saying hi. They use it for saying hide, right? So yeah, no problem. They've got that when they need it. It's the same thing that lets something like those gazelles, those four-legged things that run from the lions, those guys, you know, they've got to be able to let everybody else know, hey, dude, I'm over here on this side and there's a whole bunch of tigers coming. We think we all should run as fast as we can now. There needs to be a way to do that. And they've got it. And they run when they can, don't they? So, and sometimes people will say, oh, my cat acted up before an earthquake, or my dog did something before there was a fire or something. And this really does come from the fact that they're sensitive to things in a different way than you are. It's just a different kind of experience of the planet, right? A different way of picking up on the vibrations, the energy of what's going on, feeling a difference in how things feel in that minute. And you feel these things too. You're just not as attuned to what they could possibly mean. You're more used to things like hearing a siren off in the distance and knowing what that means. You might act on that, whereas your dog stays asleep because it doesn't know what that means, right? So you have these other ways of doing it too that don't require cell phones or other contraptions to communicate. You pick up on the way the sky looks, or the fact that the river is a different color today. You pick up on those things too. So this isn't just limited to the animal kingdom. It's just sometimes more obvious when they do it, because you're not quite, you don't hear the same frequencies, and you're not quite as attuned to reacting to what you're feeling, because you've gotten away from connecting with nature since you've started your technological age.
Why are some animals flesh eaters and some vegetarians?
Well, balance. Balance. You need animals that eat other animals, and you need animals that eat plants, or else you'd have too many animals and too many plants, and there'd be no room for any planet. Balance. It's all about balance. You know, keeping things proportional to what the current level of water and food can support.
Dogs and cats seem to sleep a lot more than humans.
They sure do, don't they? Dogs and cats love to sleep because they don't have any ambition beyond the moment. They're not as wrapped up in, oh God, what about later? They're in, oh, what about now? Feels good to sleep right now. Let's rest. Let's just enjoy it. Let's flop around. You know, what do you guys say? Let's have a lazy Sunday in bed. You do it too when you're not feeling like you have to. If you're not in, I have to, you listen to your body, not the alarm clock, and you sleep when you're tired, just like a doggy does. Doggies just happen to sleep more often than you probably would even if you weren't tired. But then again, they live a completely different way of life. Yeah, mostly it's because they can, and why not? And they're in the moment about it, so there's no dog judgment. Oh man, I slept for 20 hours today. God, I'm not doing very good being a dog. I better, you know, set that alarm and get up and get on that treadmill tomorrow. They just don't do that. They have a completely different way of experiencing it all.
Why do animals seem more conscious of the higher dimensions than most humans?
Well, there's a little bit of an assumption there. There's a little bit of an assumption that when your cat is staring into the corner for an hour, that they're looking at higher dimensions. Could be they're just looking at the corner for an hour, right? So you have to make sure that what your cat or dog or whatever is doing is connecting with the higher dimensions and not just being in the moment so profoundly that they're fascinated by something you can't see. And therein lies the answer to the question regardless. They're being in the moment so profoundly, they can be fascinated by anything, which is access to all things, higher dimensions and deeper in the moment.
I connect to animals in very deep ways. Could that be related to alternate expressions in an animal-like body?
Sure. Could be also connected to the fact that you resonate with their way of being on the world, the fact of them being in the moment, or the fact that they offer that unconditional type loving that seems to be sought, or the fact that it's easier to connect to an animal than it is to a person, so you've practiced more, or lots of reasons. We suspect that the best thing to do is not wonder, but enjoy it. You connect to animals because you do. Great. Explore that. Clearly, it's a place of fascination. Explore that. Allow yourself to develop that aspect of yourself more and more. Give yourself that permission.
Do we choose our domesticated animal partners pre-birth as part of our life path?
You can. Our famous answer? Sure. Sometimes. Sometimes not. You don't lay out your life every second before you get born. You create what we like to refer to as a syllabus. And that syllabus may say things like, born into a family that was very poverty stricken, with opportunities to try new things in college, something like that, or wants to revisit a relationship with a different dynamic. So this time, instead of being mother-daughter, will be aunt and next or next-door neighbor ladies, right? And you create a very skeletonized framework for things that you hope will be explored. And then you go about exploring what free will brings you. So you move in next to the lady next door and she's cranky and you say, I don't care, I'm moving away, because that's free will. Instead of saying, wow, here's an opportunity to live next door to a cranky lady, realizing that maybe you're healing something. Can go either way. So do you say, hey, other soul I know, you be a dog and I'll be a kid and we'll hang out together? Sure. But do you say that about every single animal you'll encounter in your life? Probably not. Probably not at all. Could be, of course, but probably not. Less likely. It's more likely that you say, as I develop as a soul, I'll find the animals that are drawn to me in that moment that resonate with how I am as I grow and change.
How do animal partners mirror information to me about my life?
Yeah. All kinds of great ways, right? How many times have you felt sad and your animal comes and sits next to you? How many times have you felt happy and your dog just runs around the whole house with you? You know, animals are going to be responsive to your emotional state. They really are. And that's why a lot of times when people have animals that are ill in some way, we can look at the illness in the animal and see how the human is experiencing something energetically or physically that may be showing up in that way in their animal, where their animal's saying, hey, I feel this in the house and this is how it shows up in me physically. Can definitely happen. We've seen it many times. So animals are going to show you what they're picking up on. Kids do it too, right? And partners do it with each other. You don't have to have any animals or kids around. Animals have this amazing ability to reflect their surroundings. Whether it's the lion lazing about in the grass because it knows it's at the top of the food chain, right? Or the rabbit hiding in a little hole just waiting to feel safe to come out. They're reflecting their experience of their reality in a very powerful way. So when you have animals in your life and they're behaving in all kinds of ways that fascinate you, you can ask yourself, what might I be feeling inside of me that is showing up as their behavior? Now, sometimes they just maybe have a chemical imbalance or something else that's going on, or an illness. But it's worth asking the question, because it's often helpful to say, wow, my cat, my dog, my bird, whatever, is behaving XYZ. What might I be broadcasting that is causing that disruption to be present in our family, in our household? And again, this is not an opportunity for you to be mean to yourself and say, oh God, I've made the dog sick. That's not what we're talking about. It's an opportunity to say, huh, what more is here? What more is here? Just like if you've been cranky, feeling uncomfortable, and all of a sudden you're coworkers are cranky and uncomfortable, you'd be like, I've kind of been grumpy and I think people are picking up on my grumpy, right? Similar.
Are the species we're trying to save, like the tigers, elephants, and polar bears, choosing to leave the planet?
They're willing. They're willing to go. They're willing to stay. Some, if we broke it down to specific animals, they all have their own expression at this time. As a species, are they choosing to leave? The truth of this planet is that it chooses for diversity more often than it chooses for sameness. What's the word? We can't think of the word. It chooses for diversity. Look around. Any gathering of people, everybody's wearing different clothes. Most of the time they look completely different, different color hairs, you name it. Drive different kind of cars, live in different kind of houses. You really have an incredibly diverse world. And it's true in the animal kingdom as well. It chooses for exploration and new opportunities to express. So it's not ideal for species to go extinct. However, it also represents a balance. Again, everything is going to come back to balance in this question. It represents a balance. If the polar temperatures change enough to the polar bears say, hey, look, we can't be in balance in this environment anymore. If the humans encroach on the tiger's territory and they don't have enough hunting ground or any animals to hunt, there's no balance there anymore. So the balance gets shifted in favor of some other expression. So are they choosing to go? They're willing to go or willing to stay, depending on how the balance is maintained. How do you maintain balance? One of the main things you do to maintain balance is to be conscious, is to know why you're doing what you're doing, and to be aware of how you're choosing to affect your world. How are you choosing to affect your world? And we don't mean you affecting the tigers in Africa. We mean you affecting right now, in this moment, how you choose to affect this world. And one of the primary ways that you're choosing to affect the world is, what are you broadcasting? What are you emanating? What feelings and thoughts are you allowing inside of yourself that you're giving out to the world? A really apparent and easy way to analyze this is, you know, what are you posting on Facebook? What are you talking to people about? Is it about fear? Or is it about growth? Is it about balance? What is important to you? And how are you sharing that with others? That's the balance we're talking about. You have your own little ecosystem right here. And if you get a good ecosystem going right here, then you affect the greater ecosystem. If you're more tolerant of diversity in your life, you're able to support a more diverse ecosystem in the world. Where are you intolerant? That's a very fine question to examine. Where are you intolerant? Because intolerance tries to limit diversity. Limiting diversity leads to fewer and fewer opportunities for expression of diversity. And whether that's polar bears or that's someone allowed to be transgender, same thing.
Is emanation a proper human response to animal species extinction?
Sure. Your ecosystem, as we called it, how are you going to affect the fact that you feel the species are declining, right? Is to make sure that you're emanating out an acceptance of diversity, an acceptance of options, an acceptance of potentials, that you yourself aren't looking for limitation in your life. As another way of saying it, you're open to change. You're open to transformation. You're open to expansion. If all you hear about on Facebook is species closing down, closing down, closing down, closing down, things, you know, businesses closing, everything closing in on you, chances are you need to look at your relationship to change. And you need to look at your relationship to your willingness to express your truth and to be emanate and to expand into the world. Right? Your world reflects back to you what your internal world is saying to it. What is your internal world saying? In the way your animals behave, in the news you get, etc. It's real. It's a real thing. You're a broadcast station. It's like a radio station or a TV station. You're broadcasting all the time what's on your channel. It's up to you to take 100% responsibility for what you broadcast. That's what we help you with, is dealing with what you are broadcasting, changing what you are broadcasting to something you would prefer, and dealing with the opportunities that pop up that trigger you and confuse you and even frighten you, where you're tempted to go into an old broadcast mode that you know doesn't help or serve you. Because whatever you're broadcasting, you're also experiencing. And you don't want to be experiencing some of the things you've experienced in the past. So how do you change it? Consciousness. Mm-hmm.
Are whales and dolphins conscious species?
Again, this is when you guys are anthropomorphizing. We're going to get that word right at least one time, maybe, in this talk. I have to have Veronica play it on the computer so we know exactly how it sounds. Conscious of what? Conscious as in the way we talk about being conscious? And why just whales and dolphins? Because they seem more like humans than, say, a fruit fly? Does that mean that fruit flies are off the list of potentially being conscious species? Because whales and dolphins are the only ones that get to be on the list? What about apes? How come is it when people ask this question, they always only include the whales and the dolphins, but not other beings that are very close to you, even very close to you in DNA, like apes? That's a very good question. And you know what? We're not going to answer it. We want you, the listener, to answer that question. Why only whales and dolphins? Because maybe you think they can communicate, or because communicate like you communicate, or because whales are so big, they have a huge brain. Again, why would you assign that amazing power to only two species on this entire beautiful planet of yours? We're curious about what comes behind that question. An interesting question would have been, what animal species are conscious? Well, which indeed? If we say that all of your animals are expressions of your soul, then wouldn't that mean all of them are? Another interesting question might be, why do we feel like whales and dolphins are closer to us in the way they express? Now we're getting to an interesting question. Because you have gotten to a point where there's a way of communicating with especially dolphins that reminds you of how you communicate with humans. There's a sense that they understand what you're asking. Now, you've got an ape that can do sign language, but do you feel as close to that ape as you do to that dolphin? No. You know why? The ape scares the crap out of you because you know at any minute it could snap you in two. Your survival instinct says, I don't care if the thing can do sign language. I don't feel safe around the ape as much as I feel safe around the shiny dolphin, Flipper, right? You've been taught dolphins are safe. Dolphins are rough on each other sometimes, but they don't seem as scary, right? Then you get a giant whale, and they just don't really seem to eat people. Like, you can swim near them, and you can go in a little boat, and there they are, and I'm not as afraid of it, and it's so big, it must be something special. Just like in, you know, here we go, Veronica's done it, so you guys have probably done it too. You go see a 1,000-year-old redwood tree, and you're like, that's something special. And you got a little shrub over here or a weed in the yard, it's less special. Is it though, really? Is it really different? Different. Special? Well, you could say 1,000 years of being on planet Earth, that's a pretty special thing. Okay. Sure. Should we give it more like power or more importance? It's a very interesting question for you to chew on. Should you? You can be in the moment with a dandelion weed in the yard as powerfully as you can be in the moment with a 1,000-year-old redwood tree. So who is the chooser here? Who's the chooser? Who's choosing how powerful the experience is? The whale? The redwood tree, or you?
Do farm animals choose to get slaughtered before they incarnate?
Some of them. It's a pretty good guess that in North America, if you choose to be a cow, you're going to be slaughtered. Pretty good guess. Choose to be a chicken? Likely you're going to get slaughtered. Choose to be a deer, got a good chance of getting shot. it's a likely trajectory. It's highly likely. So, sure, yeah. You know, right now, if you just imagined as your human self, if we said, you have the opportunity to see out of the eyes of a cat, a dog, a cow, or let's see what else we want to pick, a tiger right now. You could very easily imagine that those would be four very different experiences. Very easy. It doesn't take a stretch of the imagination. So if you say, I'm going to be a cow, chances are you know you're going to be either a dairy cow or a meat cow, because there's not that many pet cows out there. There's some, but not that many, especially in North America. We're not talking India. We're talking North America, right? A cat or a dog, you know you might be a pet, you might be a stray. Could go either way. You don't know how it's going to turn out. A tiger, great, you might be a tiger, but what about your habitat? Are you going to have any habitat? Are you going to constantly be running from poachers? Who knows what you're going to live like? But you know it's not going to be like being a cat. Two totally different things, right? So if you can do that as a human, imagine what you can do as a soul when you think about planning an incarnation. It's pretty straightforward.
How can caring people cope with the animal cruelty and insensitivity we encounter daily on this planet?
How can you cope with the cruelty and insensitivity you give to yourself daily on this planet? It's a question we think about all the time. That's why don't be mean to yourself is the only rule we've ever given you. In this whole talk, we've been saying could, totally possible, probably would, options. We're all about letting you see the expansive potential that you have here on Earth as a human. That's why we only have one rule. Don't be mean to yourself. Yet we have to remind people about it all the time. You're constantly cruel to yourself on a regular basis. And many humans are cruel to each other. So of course they're going to be cruel to animals. How do you deal with it? Start right in your lap. Stop being mean to you. Lessen the prevalence of cruelty in your world by lessening the cruelty you offer yourself. You can do it in every moment of every day. You take out a chunk of the cruelty that's on this planet by discontinuing being cruel to yourself. When you see someone being cruel to an animal, you can act to intervene, sure. How often does that exactly happen to you actually with your own eyes, not on Facebook or on the internet or on the TV? Hopefully not that often. But if it does, you can choose to act. But in every moment, you can choose to stop being cruel to yourself. And that's the number one way to act. How do you stop being mean to yourself? We have lots and lots of tools to help you with that. A lot of our work is around living consciously, which is a way to stop being mean to yourself, to decrease the amount of cruelty in your world. Start there.
Are earth animals unique to Earth?
Some of them. Some other planets have animals that are four-legged, that fly, that swim, right? And some of them you would think, wow, that looks just like a blank if you saw it with your human eyes. Given that many other planets that support life have somewhat different atmosphere, somewhat different amount of light, somewhat different, all that perfect balance that makes Earth, Earth, is not going to be duplicated. Even if you find an Earth-like planet, it's not going to feel the exact same. The gravity will be different, the amount of rotation time, the length of the day, the moons, all that stuff is going to be different in every case. The animals will be different as well in response to the environment that they prosper in. However, sometimes you would be like, wow, that looks just like a, so yeah, there, you all life forms are tailored and a reflection of the environment in which you live. Whether that's you living in a house in Sonoma, California, or you live in a house in Zimbabwe, you're going to live differently. You're going to even look different. Your skin will be a different color because of the amount of sun you get, et cetera, et cetera. Same with the animals. They're affected by those things too.
Mm-hmm. Other than human, what's the most intelligent animal on Earth?
Oh, you have to tell us how you determine intelligence. Right. That's, again, we got to be really careful that how we're looking at animals isn't the same as how we experience ourselves as humans or yourselves as humans. Is intelligence problem solving? Is intelligence having young that they raise up for a long time? Right. There's a lot of different ways of looking at what equals intelligence in this matter. But clearly the whales, you've got those birds. What are they? They're the black birds, ravens. They're very intelligent as well. The dolphins, of course. Apes are they're no slouch in their own way. They have quite a lot of intelligence. But you know, fascinatingly enough, you've got some critters that live in the sea that are pretty bright as far as working within the environment they have to work within. And that's mostly what you want to look at, is in the environment that you are operating within. Resource management, raising of the young, protection of a lengthy lifespan, right? These sorts of things, actually, how that being, whether it's a little bitty thing or a huge whale, how that being interacts with the environment and, again, finds balance in its environment is how we would measure that. And many, many different animals have an extreme strength in that area. So it's again, how you define the question, but look to the animals that have the best balance with their environment. And that's where you're going to find what we believe intelligence represents in this question. How do they solve the problem of scarcity of resources? How do they solve the fact that, oh God, there's no food right now? How do they solve the problem of, you know, finding a mate when the habitat's been encroached upon? Those are the very fascinating things in determining how well an animal works within its environment. And then, of course, you can ask yourself the same questions, right? You're all basically born a little baby. Here's a little baby. And as you grow and you're exposed to all kinds of different things, how you interact with the things you're exposed with helps you see the trajectory of your life. So you can find someone whose IQ is nothing like the IQ of someone like Albert Einstein, yet perhaps their intelligence, as in their ability to work within their system, is something that excels. Is it more important to be able to work well within your system than it is to come up with a huge theory that affects the physicists for the rest of your time on Earth, or the rest of the time you have humans? Who knows which is better or more intelligent? They're both great expressions, though. Fascinating expressions.
Do the roles of animals and humans change in the Homo spiritus experience?
Yeah, they actually do. And the roles become more of an acceptance of what animals offer and a valuing of what they offer as a contributor to consciousness. Not necessarily that their consciousness changes, but you recognize their contribution to your consciousness in a new way. Kind of what we've been talking about earlier today, but also in the sense of the deepening communication bond, the recognition of the collective soul of those animals, and tapping into not just your pet, but the collection of that animal and how it expresses over time and throughout different expressions. All these things can become more an opportunity for you to explore when you're in a Homo spiritus state. So the animals have more to offer than you're currently getting, but you're already getting so much that you sort of go, hey, a cuddly pet is enough, but there's more there. And to access it, you do need to be in the homo spiritus state, which means out of being driven by the survival instinct, out of being driven by fear, and into the ability to be quiet and present in the moment and open to what fascinates you there instead of being driven by adrenaline, which is primarily what our work is all about. And then you see, whoa, there's more here. There's more here everywhere, but there's also more here in relationship to the animals in my life and the people.